They're all heating to the body. They'll help digestion. Sweet, astringent, bitter, they're all cooling. Bitter being the coolest taste. And, for instance, pungent being the hottest taste. No, and the heaviest taste is sweet, the lightest taste is bitter. Knowing the property of the different tastes, we can understand what the effects will be on the body. For instance, if you're feeling cold, say you have a cold. So what taste would you want to eat?
Pungent, yeah. Bitter.
If you have a cold, you want to eat bitter? Yeah, sweet. If you have a cold, you want to eat sweet? Yeah. You want to take either sour, salty, or pungent. Generally, for instance, they have a formula called Brahmastra. Brahmastra, everyone has heard of that? And what is it made out of? Ginger and what else?
Chilies.
So chili, well, if you're, that used to be the standard recipe. So chili is a pungent, and stout ginger is also pungent, and the lemons are a little sour to get rid of the mucus.
No honey?
You can add honey. Honey is a special property. Although it's sweet, it's also pungent. And therefore, it doesn't upset, doesn't add mucus to the body. So if you add a lot of honey, it will. But a little honey won't affect kapha that much or disturb it. So this is called, this taste is called, there's three different types of digestion or taste in the body. Rasa, virya, and vipak, and then there's something called prabhat. And they have to do with sweet, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, and bitter. So rasa is that taste when you eat something that you taste on the tongue. As soon as the tongue touches the food, then you taste its rasa, which may be sweet, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, and bitter. And if you can't taste anything, that's called poison. Because as soon as you taste it, then it sends a message to your intestinal tract. It tells you what type of food you're eating. And then the body secretes or the different types of enzymatic substances, hormones and enzymes in the body to help its digestion. But if the body can't taste it, then it doesn't know what it's eating. It doesn't know what enzymes to secrete to digest the food. And rasa, when we eat something, the sweet, sour, salty, pungent, etc., also, by tasting it, we also extract the prana from the food. If the food has no taste, then it won't have any prana either. For instance, when we eat, say we're very hungry. You can remember after a fast day, you're very hungry. As soon as we eat the food, then we feel some energy. Isn't that right? But factually speaking, we haven't digested the food. But we've extracted energy from it in the form of prana. Therefore, it's not only by going through the process of digestion that we get energy, just by tasting the food. Therefore, if we eat and we don't taste the food, we won't get we'll be decreasing our energy. Not only we won't be able to digest it, but we won't be taking the energy out of the food. And if the food has no taste, or if it has too extreme taste, then the energy will also not be proper that we're getting out of the food. Or sometimes they say the food is dead, it tastes dead. If you ever eat a meal on an airplane, it tastes like it's dead. There's no energy in it. And if you eat some fresh food, you know, then it tastes alive. Well, it has spiritual energy. But, you know, you could have, I mean, because Krishna has eaten it, it's become spiritual. But there are different types of prasadam too. Of course, it's all transcendental, but from the material aspect, you know, there may be different qualities of prasadam. Doesn't have so much prana. It may have a little taste, but we don't notice the prana. In the West, the food may not have any taste, but it has more prana. Prana. Prana is the active ingredient in vata, which gives you energy. Prana gives you energy. Tejas helps, is the fire of transformation in the body, and kapha is the fire, or ojas is the fire of stability. What is the substance of stability? It's a subtle aspect of vata. Have you ever heard of pranayama? Yes.
Didn't modes of nature affect this process of tasting?
The modes of nature?
No.
If you're in ignorance, you will like a lower taste. And if you're in goodness, you'll like a different taste. No, not necessarily. The demons can become very strong also. Yes?
If you don't like the taste, and it's good, somebody said it's good for our body.
Well, how do they know it's good for your body?
Sorry?
If you don't like the taste,
yeah,
but someone else is, who said it was good for your body? For instance, what is your dosha composition?
Vata kapha.
Vata kapha. So, and what taste are you talking about?
Nothing particular, but from before I knew that some taste I didn't like, and they forced me to eat it, and I still didn't like it. And
for instance, for instance,
tomato.
Well, tomatoes themselves are what's called nightshades.
Mm-hmm.
So they're practically indigestible for everyone. Although they could go good on people like them on certain foods, like pizza and things like that. That's all right, but I'm just saying in general that it's a nightshade, and therefore it may cause some certain problems. But in individual persons, it's sour. So being sour, kapha people won't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And being too acidic, it may... And being... Because vata people have a tendency towards allergy, and because it's a little poisonous,
mm-hmm,
they may not like it either. Mm-hmm. So it may be a natural reaction not to like tomatoes. As far as being good for you, according to Ayurveda, it's the worst... All the vegetables, it's the worst. I never heard. Did anyone say it's good for you, tomatoes? Tomatoes come from Peru, the West. The nightshades include potatoes, tomatoes, green bell peppers, and eggplants. But they're a little poisonous because they have different types. They have a certain substance which is poisonous. Is that right? Go along with your taste?
Yeah.
Well,
can you accept that?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
But if a body which is healthy can go, can more or less follow its taste. But if a person is left to his own, he'd probably just eat, chocolate and sweets. But that doesn't mean that it's healthy for you. So we can't just go by our taste. Yes. Prabhupada said, so it said so many things. I doubt whether Prabhupada ever said anything like that. I'm sure it is.
Because the body knows what it needs, but from what I...
Did you ever ask your body, what do you need? the body knows what it needs. But do you know what the body needs? If that was the case, then no one ever gets sick. So why is it the body knows what it needs? It knows what it needs. Who's it? What's that? The body. The body is it. The body is like a person. It knows what it needs.
Like animals, they know what they could eat and cannot eat.
I'm talking to her. The animals. Yeah, the animals, they may follow material nature, the laws of nature to some degree. And they may, some of them, usually know what they need. But even like a hungry animal, a dog, for instance, he'll eat so much until it dies. He'll burst. So they're not perfectly, they know what they need. Its body knows what it needs. It doesn't always work like that. Not that the animals, they always eat the right thing. They may have more of a tendency to do that because they're more controlled by the natural workings of nature. But the idea is that the body knows what it needs. Yeah, if we're in harmony with nature, then we'll be able to understand what the body needs. We'll be able to fulfill its need. Just like when you're cold, naturally, when the body's cold, naturally we think, I'm cold, maybe I should get something that's warm. It's natural, the opposite. But if we're not conscious, then we may go out and run around and in the cold and get colder and get sick. Therefore, it's more up to us to know what the body needs than to just so-called trust the body, knows what it needs. Whatever the body's telling me, I should just do it. It doesn't always work like that. It's just, we're not that, you know, the body's not that it's going to write me a letter or fax me, tell me what it needs, and I go out and get it. We should know what the body needs. That's why we have the class. Otherwise, if everything went on according to what the body needs, then why would you need Ayurveda class to figure out what your body needs? It would just tell you. I need salt, you know, give me 3, you know, chapatis today and put this much salt on it. And you can add a tomato today. I don't mind. Do you ever get a message from the body like that? What's that? Well, in general, you know, the body does have an innate intelligence. You know, there is a natural working of the body. And if we're intelligent, then we can understand what its needs are. Just like if it's lacking something, then there will be a tendency to want to get that taste. That's the way the body works. But then we have to be conscious of it. We have to be a little aware of what the body needs, and then we have to go out and get it. Because the body will sometimes push us to do things, and it doesn't need it. And if we think, well, the body knows what it needs, it's pushing me to eat 3, you know, ice cream cones today. It must be the body. But it may not be, you know, the body's telling me what it needs. It may be my mind's telling me what I need. Maybe just material desire. Doesn't need it at all. Yes?
Okay, according to this schedule, it looks like vata and kapha, they always say what's good for vata is not good for kapha, and the other way around.
Opposite, yeah.
So, what if you're vata kapha, then?
No, these are different proportions. It's not that everything is equally proportionate of vata. It's not that the world is equally proportionate, or every food is equally proportionate. Vata kapha people, they'll lack, being a dual composition, they'll lack fire. And lacking fire, they'll always have a tendency towards feeling cold. Are you vata kapha? So they'll always have a slight tendency towards feeling cold, lack of digestion, lack of intensity. Although vata is very intense, but vata is intense in the sense it's always active, but intensity of, you know, complete absorption in one thing. So they'll have a tendency to vacillate between being lethargic, being kapha or complacent, and being overly active. but they'll have a tendency not to really focus in on one thing and really get absorbed in it. Right. That's easier to do that. That's one way of doing it, to try to make sure that your fire digestion is balanced. There's different types of fire digestion. It could be Manda Agni, too slow. That's usually caused by imbalance of kapha. It could be too intense, which is caused by imbalance of pitta. Or it can be too fast, which is caused by an imbalance of vata, or irregular, caused by an imbalance of vata. Or it can be equal, sama agni, which means balanced, which is the best way of digesting food. If it's too slow, you become constipated. The food takes forever to digest. If it's too fast, whatever you eat, you just burn up. If it's irregular, one day you have good digestion, the next day you have constipation, and then the next day you have diarrhea. And if it's balanced, every day you can eat a certain amount of food and it gets digested and assimilated in the body, regulated. So vata kapha will have a tendency to have either irregular digestion or very slow digestion. Not, their appetite will not be that great, although it may vary. And being that the lack of pitta, they'll never really have real fast digestion. Generally, it'll be slow and irregular. So they have to eat the food that they can digest at regulated times. So they have to add a little bit more fire, maybe a little bit more ginger or something before they eat to their food. Most of these things don't take a huge amount of change in your diet. It's not that, you know, you have to come, that there has to be at least 7 different cooks in the temple. One for the pittas, one for the vata pittas, one for the vata kaphas, one for the vatas, one for the... It's not that you need 7 cooks in the temple or else the devotees will die. But these things can be adjusted just by slight amount of spices. Just like vata people may add a little bit more salt. Pitta people, generally, it's good if the cooks, they don't cook too spicy or fry things or make everything full of sugar. If they just eat moderately spiced, if they prepare moderately spiced food, then vata people want a little bit more spice so they can help them digest their food. They can take a little ginger and salt. And kapha people can take, say, a little ginger with a little bit of lemon. And pitta people generally don't need any spices. So a little variation in the spices can make up for your particular doshic balance. It doesn't take a huge amount. Mostly, people get indigestion not because so much what they eat, or they eat too much of one thing and they don't eat a balance. It's possible that in our temples we don't have a balanced diet. But if there's rice, dal, and chapatis and a little sabji, that's pretty much of a balanced diet. And maybe a little milk product here and there. Yes?
I heard that if you eat one meal a day, then you can eat as much as you can.
All these crazy things. Where did you hear it from?
I'm not devoted today. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah? Where did he hear it from?
Oh, there's a statement of Prabhupada, but if you eat once a day, you can digest stones.
Oh, yeah? So, anyone here eat once a day? Do you know anyone who eats once a day? What's that?
I sometimes do.
Did you ever eat a stone? Did you ever eat a stone?
No.
Do you think you would have digested a stone if you would have eaten? I mean, these are general. Obviously, if you only eat once a day and you don't eat too much, then you'll be able to digest whatever you're eating. But to literally take it, that if I only eat once a day, it's an instruction from Prabhupada, who's a pure devotee, who's intimately connected with Krishna. Therefore, if I get indigestion, I lose my faith in this whole process of Krishna consciousness. He told me I can eat even stones. So I had, you know, I had just one small pebble and I got sick. There must be something wrong. I lost my faith. He told a lie. Anyone has, yeah, if you eat once a day, you're more likely to be hungry. Your fire digestion will be, you know, the strongest it could possibly be because you're only eating once a day. Therefore, maybe you can eat a little bit more than if you ate twice a day. But there's just so much you can eat anyhow. And if you try to eat too much, you'll get sick. You think, I can eat anything, you know, I'm hungry now, I'm eating once a day, and therefore I can eat as much as I want. It's actually very hard for the body to digest all at once a whole lot of food. Because, as it says throughout the Bhagavatam and all of the literature, that when you eat, if you eat light food, then you can fill one third of your one quarter of your body with air, one half with food, and one quarter with water. That's heavy food. And then for light food, one third food, one third air, one third water. Once you go over that, it doesn't matter how many times a day you eat, you're going to get sick. You'll have this huge ball, you know, the stomach is, how big is the stomach? How big is the stomach? Yeah, two fists, the stomach is about that big maximum. So, if you eat that much food, you know, even if it's prashadam and you think it's transcendental, still, you know, how is it going to fit into that little tiny stomach? But, you know, as if it's the law of nature, Prabhupada said, he with his magic wand, he gave the blessings. Anyone who eats once a day, you can digest stones. So I had, you know, 15 chapatis and three glasses of dal and you know, three plates of sabji and three milk sweets, and then I ate a couple of stones and it all digested. Because Prabhupada said it would. Yes. Well, anything, anywhere you see fire there, sour, salty, and pungent, they'll be warming. And astringent, bitter, and sweet will be cooling. Bitter being the coolest taste. Yes? If we eat twice a day? Why? From who? Who's? Which part of Ayurveda did he quote? Did he quote some part of the Ayurveda? Was a devotee an Ayurvedic doctor? Did he study the Ayurveda? What is his authority in discussing the point? He didn't quote. He didn't explain it, did he?
No, he said that generally we take too much dal.
So does that mean every day or too much in a day? Too much means every day, or too much means too much in a day? How much is too much? How much is too much? So what did it mean to you? You stopped taking dal? After you heard it, what did you do?
But I don't take it every day.
Why?
Because he's sober.
Well, but did he say too much? What was he talking about? People take 5 cups in a day and that's too much, or they take 1 cup and that's too much if you take it every day? If you take 1 cup a day, every day, is that too much? According to him? Is that what he's talking about? You think so? Is that what he said?
I don't know what he said. I'm just
Yeah, but I'm asking you because you're. We're not. If you ask a question, we have to know what the question is. In other words, you don't know what the source is. You don't exactly know what he said or what he meant. But on the basis of that, you decide not to take dal every day. So is that very logical? In other words, if we don't know exactly what he's talking about, just like if you take dal every day, if you say, this person takes too many sweets every day, there should be some symptoms. Say he took too many sweets every day and he feels stronger every day and he never gets sick. Does that make any sense? If someone says, this devotee, he takes too many sweets every day, and every day he gets stronger and he gets healthier and never gets sick. Is that what you'd expect? No, there should be certain symptoms. So if devotees in ISKCON take too much dal every day, what are the symptoms? What happens when you take too much dal every day? Did he explain what the symptoms are? So why did you stop taking dal every day for? Do you feel healthier now that you're taking dal every other day? What changed in your life after you stopped taking it every day? Did anything change?
But sometimes when I eat on it, I have to guess.
How much do you take every day?
One cup.
Just one cup. Now you only take one cup every other day.
Yes, sometimes.
Sometimes means how often every other day you take it. Now you don't get any gas when you take dal? You only get gas every other day. Well, if dal... if dal doesn't have the proper spicing in it, generally dal should have some, for instance, fenugreek. Especially if it's not mung dal. If you take split pea dal, do you take mung dal or split pea dal? Mung dal. Well, mung dal has the least tendency to cause gas. But generally, any kind of dal or legumes, lentils or legumes, they'll cause gas because that's their nature. They're heavy in vata and air. But if they're cooked properly, especially mung dal has a very small tendency to do that. If it's cooked with like ginger, if there's a chanch in it, it's very unlikely it's going to cause gas. Generally, gas is caused by improper digestion. But dal, especially mung dal, is not going to cause that at all. As far as eating mung dal every day, it's not going to harm you. It's one of the staple foods is dal and rice. During Chaturmasya, that's all you eat. If you tell someone who's fasting in Chaturmasya, you should only eat every other day a cup of dal, they'd starve to death by the end of the 4 months. It's not like that. Anything else?
Yeah. You often hear that devotees, they say, we want less spices in our food and less meat because they think it's more healthy. But I really don't feel that it's more difficult to digest when there's spices, and I even find food more boring when there's no spices.
Yeah, if there's no spices, it's very hard to digest food. If you have no spices whatsoever, if the food, especially in Kali Yuga, when the vegetables tend to have no taste, they all taste like each other. Therefore, spicing is the main thing that helps you digest. And the places in South India where it's hot, for instance, in South India, has anyone ever been to South India? Yeah. It's hot there, isn't it? Is the food spicy or bland? They add chilies to the food at all? And oh, the Bengalis, they just sit there at the meal and they just chomp on chilies like we eat pretzels. In one meal, they may eat 20 different red chilies or green chilies. What's that?
20.
funny. Yeah. They just eat them like we're eating fried potatoes, chips. So in hot weather, in order to balance the heat, the body has a tendency to take the fire out of the body. So along with that fire, the fire digestion is taken out of the body. In very hot weather, then one's digestion goes down. So to aid digestion, people eat spices, especially chilies. Similarly, other types of spices, they have an effect on the body. Most of the taste we get is, you know, all these bitter, practically mostly comes from spicing and pungent and salt itself. All these different tastes, and most of it comes from the spicing. So a good cook has to know how to spice properly. If it's too much spicing, or it's just like it's called salt to taste. If you have too much salt, you can't eat the food. And if there's not enough salt, then it's tasteless. You have to have just the right amount of salt. Certainly, all the other spices, one knows have to know how to combine them to produce a nice taste. It's not too spicy and not too bland. I think we have to stop there. So today, we went over a little bit about the rasa, at least. And tomorrow, we'll go over the virya, vipak, prabhav, the effects of overuse, predominant emotions, effects on the consciousness, and how to eat properly. And here, we have some more tests, and we have some more of the handouts. It looks like they really got into the emotions today. Predominant emotions. And so everything is here. So anyone who doesn't have one of these Xerox copies, they can come up and take it. And also we have the dosha tests if anyone needs them also. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Thus far, we've discussed something about how Ayurveda is related to Krishna consciousness, beginning with the fact that there's only one real disease, which is lack of Krishna consciousness. And that disease is manifested in two ways. One of them is the desire to become God, that is the lord of the material energy and its enjoyer. And the other aspect of the disease is to hate the fact that we can't become God and the controller. So the real disease is forgetfulness of Krishna, wanting to become Krishna, and hating the fact that we can't do it. And of course, the ultimate cure is Krishna consciousness. And in every aspect, as we went over a whole chart of how digestion goes on and forms the dhatus, and from the dhatus you get ojas, and ojas helps give vitality for the other subtle digestive powers like agni, tejas, prana, which keeps everything going. In other words, it's a process. If you digest your food, then you get the energy which will help you digest your food tomorrow. That by digesting food, the subtle energies, the essential energies are formed, and these essential energies are necessary so that you can digest your food. So if you're healthy and you digest your food, then you get your energy to digest your food. But if due to some reason there's indigestion on some level, then you don't digest your food, then you don't get your energy, the subtle energies, prana, tejas, and ojas, which will allow you to digest your food in the future. And therefore you get sick and sicker and then you leave your body. So why is it that there's indigestion? It's because it's called pragya aparat. Someone doesn't follow the laws of nature. And why do people not follow the laws of nature? Because they're not Krishna conscious on some level. They refuse to follow Krishna's laws. That's called Maya. And why are people in Maya? Because they want to be the law, etc. Again, because they want to be the laws and the enjoyer. They don't want to do their duty. So on the basic level, there's the duty. Duty means to follow the law, to find out what the laws are, and to do them. Duty doesn't mean, well, I'm simply I'm this, I have this designation, and if I just follow the duties for this designation. Now in the Veda culture, for instance, people understood if you eat too much, you get sick. And if you follow your duty, if you act as a proper, whatever, you know, duty you have in the Vanashram system, then the tendency to violate the laws of nature reduces. And there's people checking. The Brahmins check on the Kshatriyas check on the Vaishyas check on the Shudras, the king checks on everyone, the Brahmins check on everyone to see that people are doing their duty. Therefore, there is less of a chance of people violating the laws of nature. And because of that, people are healthy, and because Jagga is being performed, all the proper sunlight is there, the fresh water is there, everything's there for healthy, happy, satisfied life, which leads progressively towards Krishna consciousness. So in our particular situation, just a comment from the back. Everyone has their opinion. In this kind, even the sink has its opinion. This is all spiritual. Therefore, yesterday we were going over the different tastes. Sweet, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, etc. And which tastes increase or decrease or increase or balance the doshas. But today what we'll do is we'll go a little bit about the psychology behind the tastes also. Because it's a fact that maybe we want sweet, but sweet also has its psychological aspect. And in the handouts, it deals a little bit with the psychology of the different tastes. So everything has its taste, just like sweet. Has its psychological taste, which is what? Anyone have an idea? What is? Yeah, satisfaction. And in the spiritual world, who's the sweetest? Krishna. Yeah. So everyone is enjoying Krishna in the spiritual world, because he's at least in Goloka Vrindavan, because he's the personification of sweet, Ladini Shakti. And the opposite, when it's sweet, is on the lower. When it's more than, you get too much sweet, then what is the psychology of it? What do you get? Complacency. I forget how to play sin B-N-C-Y. Complacency. How do you spell complacency?
C-O-N-C-L-A.
P-L-A. E-N-C, P-L-
C.
E-N-C-Y. E-N-C-Y. So complacency. So if you follow the laws of nature, then you get satisfaction. And if you don't follow the laws of nature, eating too much sweet, you become complacent. And of course, there are other things also, such as greed. I think Butcher mentioned also. All the negative, the lower modes of nature you get by not following, using sweet properly. And by using sweet properly, you get all the higher. Satisfaction, I guess the basic, whatever. So that's the same with all the different tastes. They have their higher and their lower. If you follow the laws, then you get the higher experience. And if you don't follow the laws, then you get the lower experience. So sour, the higher is discrimination. And the lower is envy. Like the fox and the grapes. Well, the grapes, they're all sour. envy. And the higher it, sour gives discrimination. So if one takes sour in the proper amount, then you get the proper psychology also. Or if you have proper discrimination, then you won't be sour, you won't be envious. If you have the higher quality, you won't have the lower one. And if you have the lower one, if you're envious, you won't be able to discriminate properly. And then they have this the physical ramification. Just like too much sweet will harm what organ?
Liver.
No?
Kidneys?
Pancreas. Pancreas. Or the spleen. What's that? Pancreas secretes insulin, which regulates the blood sugar level. It takes the sugar out of the blood and stores it as fat, as glycogen in the liver. So if the pancreas doesn't work properly, you get diabetes. There's not enough insulin is being secreted into the blood, and therefore the blood the sugar is not being taken out of it. Or you get hypoglycemia, which usually leads to diabetes. And the spleen, of course, is responsible for creating blood in the body, but it also directly relates to the pancreas. What's that?
These diseases you get when you
get
take too much sweet?
Yeah. Too much or too little. Therefore, satisfaction will probably lead to the proper amount of taking in a sweet, which will lead to a proper functioning of the pancreas and the spleen. On the other hand, if the pancreas and spleen are not functioning properly, you won't be able to properly utilize sweet, you won't be satisfied, and probably you'll tend towards some other lower level of emotions. Similarly, sour, it's not that you know, I can eat any sweet, I can do anything I want or have any emotion I want, and everything's going to turn out alright on the physical platform. There's an interaction between them on all levels. You know, they're all interacting. Therefore, one thing will affect the psychology that we have, our mentality, will also affect our physical body. And ultimately, of course, this is in the mode of goodness. This tends towards passion and ignorance. And in passion and ignorance, you can't understand Krishna consciousness. So if you're greedy, you're complacent, then you won't be able to understand what real Krishna consciousness is, and you're unlikely to take the real source of sweet, the highest sweet, which is Krishna, which is available through Krishna consciousness. Similarly, sour, discrimination, envy, what organ does too much sour especially affect? Yes, the liver. So taking alcohol, which is intensely sour, will affect your liver, imbalance your liver, which will lead to envy, also create a very low. People with affected livers, they're usually depressed and envious, and they're not feeling very enlivened. So also by taking or hurting the liver, you'll also have a tendency towards lower emotions. And your discrimination will go down. Similarly, sour, salty, what too much salt will hurt what? The kidneys. And what's the higher consciousness for salt? Salt, what's that? No, salt gives zest to things. Zest gives a little flavor. Just like if you have things without any salt, generally they don't have any taste. So a little bit of salt adds taste to things or zest. And too much salt is hedonism. Hedonism is unrestrained or unrestricted sense gratification. The example is used as the old salt. In English they talk about an old salt. The sailor who comes back from sea after 6 months out at sea, then his 3 days on the land in the port, he's trying to figure out how to enjoy unlimited sense gratification. It's called an old salt. So that's hedonism, unrestricted sense gratification. So little salt gives some taste, little zest, it adds to the flavor of things, and too much of it, just like for instance, I know here, but